28. The district attorney faced the jury. I offer as evidence this object which was found at the scene of the crime. He held in his hand a corn cob. It appeared to have been dipped in dark brownish paint. The reason this was not offered sooner is that its bearing on the case was not made clear until the testimony of the defendant's wife, which I have just caused to be read aloud to you gentlemen from the record. You have just heard the testimony of the chemist and the gynecologist, who is, as you gentlemen know, an authority on the most sacred affairs of that most sacred thing in life, womanhood, who says that this is no longer a matter for the hangman, but for a bonfire of gasoline. I object, Horace said. The prosecution is attempting to sway. Sustained, the court said. Strike out the phrase beginning, who says that, Mr. Clerk? You may instruct the jury to disregard it, Mr. Benbow. Keep to the matter in hand, Mr. District Attorney. The district attorney bowed. He turned to the witness stand where Temple sat. From beneath her black hat, her hair escaped in tight red curls like clots of resin. The hat bore a rhinestone ornament. Upon her black satin lap lay a platinum bag. Her pale tan coat was open upon a shoulder knot of purple. Her hands lay motionless, palm up on her lap. Her long blonde legs slanted, lax-ankled. Her two motionless slippers with their glittering buckles lay on their sides as though empty. Above the ranked, intent faces, white and pallid as the floating bellies of dead fish, she sat in an attitude at once detached and cringing, her gaze fixed on something at the back of the room. Her face was quite pale, the two spots of rouge like paper discs pasted on her cheekbones, her mouth painted into a savage and perfect bow, also like something both symbolical and cryptic cut carefully from purple paper and pasted there. The district attorney stood before her. "What is your name?" She did not answer. She moved her head slightly as though he had obstructed her view, gazing at something in the back of the room. "What is your name?" he repeated, moving also into the line of her vision again. Her mouth moved. "Louder," he said. "Speak out. No one will hurt you. Let these good men, these fathers and husbands, hear what you have to say and right your wrong for you." The court glanced at Horace, his eyebrows raised. But Horace made no move. He sat with his head bent a little, his hands clutched in his lap. "Temple Drake," Temple said. "Your age?"
18.
"Where is your home?"
"Memphis,"
she said in a scarce distinguishable voice. "Speak a little louder. These men will not hurt you. They are here to right the wrong you have suffered. Where did you live before you went to Memphis?"
"In Jackson."
"Have you relations there?"
"Yes."
"Come, tell these good men,
my father."
"Your mother is dead?"
"Yes."
"Have you any sisters?"
"No."
"You are your father's only daughter." Again the court looked at Horace. Again he made no move.
"Yes."
"Where have you been living since May 12th of this year?" Her head moved faintly, as though she would see beyond him. He moved into her line of vision, holding her eyes. She stared at him again, giving her parrot-like answers. "Did your father know you were there?"
"No."
"Where did he think you were?"
"He thought I was in school."
"You were in hiding, then, because something had happened to you and you dared not—" "I object," Horace said. "The question is lead—" "Sustained," the court said. "I have been on the point of warning you for some time, Mr. Attorney, but defendant would not take exception for some reason." The district attorney bowed toward the bench. He turned to the witness and held her eyes again. Where were you on Sunday morning, May 12th?
I was in the crib.
The room sighed, its collective breath hissing in the musty silence. Some newcomers entered, but they stopped at the rear of the room in a clump and stood there. Temple's head had moved again. The district attorney caught her gaze and held it. He half turned and pointed at Goodwin. Did you ever see that man before? She gazed at the district attorney, her face quite rigid, empty. From a short distance, her eyes, the two spots of rouge and her mouth, were like five meaningless objects in a small heart-shaped dish. Look where I am pointing.
Yes.
Where did you see him?
In the crib.
What were you doing in the crib?
I was hiding.
Who were you hiding from?
From him.
That man there. Look where I am pointing.
Yes.
But he found you.
Yes.
Was anyone else there?
Tommy was.
He said, was he inside the crib or outside?
He was outside by the door. He was watching.
He said he wouldn't let... Just a minute. Did you ask him not to let anyone in?
Yes.
And he locked the door on the outside?
Yes.
But Goodwin came in?
Yes.
Did he have anything in his hand?
He had the pistol.
Did Tommy try to stop him?
Yes.
He said he... Wait. What did he do to Tommy? She gazed at him. He had the pistol in his hand. What did he do then?
He shot him.
The district attorney stepped aside. At once the girl's gaze went to the back of the room and became fixed there. The district attorney returned, stepped into her line of vision. She moved her head. He caught her gaze and held it and lifted the stained corn cob before her eyes. The room sighed, a long, hissing breath.
Did you ever see this before?
Yes.
The district attorney turned away. Your Honor and gentlemen, you have listened to this horrible, this unbelievable story which this young girl has told. You have seen the evidence and heard the doctor's testimony. I shall no longer subject this ruined, defenseless child to the agony of... He ceased. The heads turned as one and watched a man come stalking up the aisle toward the bench. He walked steadily, paced and followed by a slow gaping of the small white faces, a slow hissing of collars. He had neat white hair and a clipped mustache like a bar of hammered silver against his dark skin. His eyes were pouched a little. A small paunch was buttoned snugly into his immaculate linen suit. He carried a Panama hat in one hand and a slender black stick in the other. He walked steadily up the aisle in a slow expulsion of silence like a prolonged sigh, looking to neither side. He passed the witness stand without a glance at the witness, who still gazed at something in the back of the room, walking right through her line of vision like a runner crossing a tape, and stopped before the bar above which the court had half risen, his arms on the desk.
Your Honor, the old man said, is the court done with this witness?
Yes, sir, Judge, the court said. Yes, sir. Defendant, do you waive?
The old man turned slowly, erect above the held breaths, the little white faces, and looked down at the six people at the counsel table. Behind him, the witness had not moved. She sat in her attitude of childish immobility, gazing like a drugged person above the faces toward the rear of the room.
The old man turned to her and extended his hand. She did not move. The room expelled its breath, sucked it quickly in, and held it again. The old man touched her arm. She turned her head toward him, her eyes blank and all pupil above the three savage spots of rouge. She put her hand in his and rose, the platinum bag slipping from her lap to the floor with a thin clash, gazing again at the back of the room. With the toe of his small, gleaming shoe, the old man flipped the bag into the corner where the jury box joined the bench, where a spittoon sat, and steadied the girl down from the dais. The room breathed again as they moved on down the aisle. Halfway down the aisle, the girl stopped again, slender in her smart open coat, her blank face rigid. Then she moved on, her hand in the old man's. They returned down the aisle, the old man erect beside her, looking to neither side, paced by that slow whisper of collars. Again the girl stopped. She began to cringe back, her body arching slowly, her arm tautening in the old man's grasp. He bent toward her, speaking. She moved again, in that shrinking and rapt abasement. Four younger men were standing stiffly erect near the exit. They stood like soldiers, staring straight ahead until the old man and the girl reached them. Then they moved and surrounded the other two, and in a close body, the girl hidden among them, they moved toward the door. Here they stopped again. The girl could be seen shrunk against the wall just inside the door, her body arched again. She appeared to be clinging there. Then the five bodies hid her again. And again, in a close body, the group passed through the door and disappeared. The room breathed, a buzzing sound like a wind getting up. It moved forward with a slow, increasing rush, on above the long table where the prisoner and the woman with the child and Horace and the district attorney and the Memphis lawyer sat, and across the jury and against the bench in a long sigh. The Memphis lawyer was sitting on his spine, gazing dreamily out the window. The child made a fretful sound, whimpering. "Hush," the woman said. "Shh."